Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Flight Risk Podcast Studios. And I am your host, Robert Bruton, and welcome. And today, and we've been talking about this for a little while, but I actually published a new book. It's pretty extensive that goes well deep into this, but it's called The Transformative Power of Knowledge, A Guide to Becoming a Voracious Lifelong Learner. And you've heard me talk about it potentially ad nauseum that knowledge is power, and it truly is. You can overcome so many things in your life with knowledge, and it eliminates fear. It definitely, you know, the reason that people stop doing a certain thing, you know, in their life is because of fear. And because if you don't know how to do something, that basically becomes a fear response, because you don't want to look stupid. You don't want to look like you don't know what the hell you're doing. All that plays into your mind. And I'm here to challenge you to say that if you want to learn how to do something, you can. You're just going to have to apply yourself, and you're going to have to realize many, many things in order to overcome obstacles that are going to come in your way. Your brain is going to get to a point and go, oh God, we've never done this, you know, and you're going to get into a situation where you'll quit. It is basically what it boils down to. And it's a damn shame. Don't do that to yourself. So my challenge to you is to listen to what I'm saying today. This is a really important episode. And get, you know, if you're need some help, get this book. I'm telling you, and I'm not saying that in a self-serving way, although it sounds like it. I'm not. It's truly, there is a lot of information here that can help you. So today we're going to kind of go do a little synopsis of what you can expect in this book. It is out available on Amazon. It went out published yesterday. We'll probably get it on Kobo here in a couple of days. And there'll be a paperback version coming very soon. So, the first part one of the book is called Overcoming Fear and Anxiety. You know, and chapter one is Conquering the Unknown. You know, everybody's fearful of the unknown, you know, so once you know something, I guess is for lack of a better word, when the unknown becomes in focus and clear, then your fear is out the door, your anxiety about it is out the door. And chapter two, knowledge as an antidote to fear. Chapter 3, Building Unshakable Self-Trust. 4 is Strategies for Systematic Fearlessness. And 5, in the end of part 1 of the book, The Freedom of the of an Empowered Mind. So, you've heard me say it before, and I feel so strongly about this, is so many people quit, and so many young people just, you know, oh, it's too hard, I can't learn it, you know. Well, it's too hard and you can't learn it because you've never applied yourself to learn something that's that difficult, if you will. Something that may be a challenge to learn, you can learn it, you're just going to have to take some time and really study it. And that's where people get separated. Your level of success will be dictated about, are you willing to take one step further? Are you willing to move one step more? Because most people that are successful will tell you that the reason I'm successful is because I'm willing to go one step further than my competition. Or I'm willing to go one step further than you. So you have to be willing to go the extra mile, even when the extra mile is difficult and hard. Even when the extra mile feels like it's beating you up, it's not. It's your head saying, wait a minute, we love being over here comfortable, and we love being over here just fine, leave us alone. You know, and your noodle's gonna be your toughest enemy. So you gotta retrain your mind. You gotta retrain your mind that all of these things are okay. Your subconscious will respond in kind. So don't just get lost in, well, I can't do it, it's too hard. Because it's not. It's just too hard for the moment. You know, think about when you rode a bike. You know, it was hard when you first started, but because you wanted to learn how to ride a bike because all your friends were riding bikes, then it became that fear factor kind of went out the window a little bit, and you were willing to take some bumps and bruises in order to have and see the fun that you could potentially have. Because you see other people riding bikes, you see other people having fun, see other children out there having a great time riding their bike. But when you first start out riding a bike, you're going to bust your ass a couple of times. And then what's funny about it all is when you're a kid, you're going to look for the craziest shit to jump your bike off or the craziest hill to go kamikaze down. Because you know how to control your bike, but you know you're not afraid of falling. You're not afraid of busting your ass. So with knowledge, fear goes straight out the window. And that's the empowerment of that is unbelievable. Unbelievable. So as you move on through the book, part two is about boosting confidence and self-assurance. And there's five chapters in this part. Six is the confidence, no, the confidence, knowledge, connection. So when you have what the wonderful thing about knowledge is that it gives you confidence. So if you knew how to, let's say your fear was public speaking. But if you had the knowledge necessary to make that speech and you knew kind of what was going on and how to overcome the fears, you know, everybody gets butterflies or gets nervous. But if you have just an absolute fear, oh, I couldn't stand up in front of the class and give a speech. This will boost your confidence and self-assurance because you do have a connection between confidence and knowledge. There is a true connection there. Chapter seven is trusting your ability to learn. You know, and like I said in the just a moment ago, you have to your mind has to learn to trust your ability to learn. It's gonna, it sounds crazy, but it really is. You know, that people say, you know, they sabotage themselves because of fear of success. And everybody, you know, and that just doesn't make sense. What do you mean? I want to make more money. You'd be surprised at the number of people that sabotage themselves so they don't. Because what happens is your mind is complacent where you are today. Okay? It's used to the level of anxiety that you face. It's used to the level of frustration. It's used to the level of pain. And when you add new components to that, your mind is going to start saying, whoa, 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 no, pal. No, sugar, we need to slow down. No, we're happy right here. You know, everything is cool. You know, we're not going to get out there and do something that is going to cause us pain or suffering or anxiety. No. So you're going to have to fight your noodle, okay, and learn to trust your ability to learn, okay? So that's a big key thing, you know? And cultivating quiet confidence, okay? That this is going to help you, you know, people who come in and brag or people who come in and crow about this or that, I'm as good as the day is long, man. That's when I start backing up and saying, I'm as good as gone. Because if somebody's having to tell me that they're as good as the day is long, they're probably not very good person, probably is not somebody I want in my around in my circle. You know, the people that you have in your life today may not be the same people that you have in your life tomorrow. So you want to do all this, but do it where you have quiet confidence, okay? You don't boast, and you keep it humble, okay? Knowledge powered by adaptability, chapter 9. You have to realize that, and this, we've talked about this, you know, and I say this, you know, you talk about and look at critical thinking. In order to, the reason a lawyer will out maneuver you is because they listen to your side of the, they quietly listen to your side of a situation or story, okay? That helps them strengthen their position for their side. So that's where I see all these young people losing their minds, you know, over the day's current events, okay? But they can't articulate anything other than fuck you, fascist, or, you know, white supremacist, or something like that. That's not an argument. That's not something to base anything on other than divisiveness. You know, it just divides. You know, it's not... too many people have a your way or the highway attitude, and that's bullshit. Absolute bullshit. You have to be open to new ideas, you know? I'm not saying you have to subscribe to them, but you do, if you listen to them and you do have a strong counterpoint to theirs, if you understand where they're coming from, it allows you to make a better and more informed decision and a more informed retort, if you will, about what it is that you believe in. So you may be able to sway people your way, or you may sit there and go, you know what, I didn't really think of this way, because somebody had the intelligence and became well versed in their dialogue and in their knowledge to tell me a compelling point that makes me think twice about my own, or makes me think twice and opens up the dialogue of, hey, wait a minute, maybe we could work together on this. You know, there's something to be said for that, especially when you live in a country where we're all supposed to be on the same side. We're all supposed to be, you know, a loving, caring group of people, and you have so much hate that it's unbelievable. And so much hate is usually fueled by, you don't have a clue what the fuck you're talking about. You're just going with the flow of your friends. You're just going with the flow of what, you know, your college buddies are doing. Be a free thinker. I'm not saying that you can't have your thoughts and your beliefs. Absolutely, but make sure that they're entrenched and embedded in real knowledge. Because you're never going to sell shit unless you understand. And I mean selling an idea, not selling a toaster. You're never going to sell your idea to anybody or get anybody to realize it if you don't understand clearly both sides of the argument. So trusting your ability to learn, cultivating quiet confidence, knowledge-powered adaptability is just huge. Huge, huge, huge. Because if you're willing to be open to adapt to, and again, not things that go counter to your beliefs. But if you say, you know, old Sue and I over here, we argue like crazy all the time. We don't see eye to eye on this. But at the end of that discourse, we're sitting down laughing as humans and drinking a cup of coffee or teasing each other, ribbing each other a little bit, you know? And you live and let live. So, you know, ultimatums and trying to shove some ideology down someone's throat, that's not learning. That's not adaptability. That's just, you know, what it is, call it what it is. It's just, you can't sell it any other way. And so my invitation to you is learn everything there is to know about that which you're passionate about. I don't understand, for example, trans people. Okay, I don't understand how you get to that, because I can never really find any information that helps me to understand, because most of the of it is spewed with such hate and so forth that it's I would like to understand, you know, what it is to walk in your shoes, you know, and then perhaps I can say, you know, and there is one trans activist that I saw that, you know, that I'm like, well, you know, I could listen to, because she really makes, you know, tries to make a valued and solid point. You know, she's not screaming and yelling that, you know, I'm some privileged Caucasian fascist that doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. And sorry about the little glitch in the matrix. You guys probably heard Glitzy bark, and I definitely, her spoiled little butt, I had to tend to her cookie need real quick, so I apologize. But anyway, you know, if we're going to sit down and understand each other, then let's sit down and understand each other. You know, that what's wrong with that? You know, there is absolutely nothing wrong with sitting down, and we don't have to agree at all. But, let's not hate each other just because we don't share the same ideology. You know, and I have, you know, like I've said in many, many of my podcasts and in my books, you know, I have dear, dear friends from all walks of life that I have a lot. In fact, within the entertainment industry that I work in, I have a lot of gay friends and colleagues that I enjoy immensely working with, because they're incredibly gifted, incredibly talented. But here's the thing. When we're working and creating our art and creating our films and creating what we do, I don't think at any time are we focused on anything other than we're colleagues. We're, you know, people who enjoy working with each other and making each other laugh and ribbing each other and having a good time. It's never about an ideology that seems to be spreading so fast that we should all be divided. And that's just bullshit. You know? Absolute bullshit. We don't have to be divided at all. And to realize that, you know, for the first time in my lifetime, you know, I have people who are demanding that you call them by a particular pronoun. I don't have a problem with that, but what I have a problem is you shoving it up my ass, you know? And I, you know, I won't say ma'am or sir or something like that, but I grew up in a time, and you have to remember, these are the cultural differences, and this is where knowledge can help all of us. I grew up in a time where my grandfather instilled in me to be respectful of women. Yes, ma'am. Be respectful of my elders. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Open a door for a lady. Not because she can't open the damn door, but you do it in a respectful way. And I open it for men, like today, like not today, but in today's world, you know, if I'm at a restaurant, hell, I may hold a door for an entire family. Not because anybody in that family can't open the door. You're just doing it to smile and say hello and be nice to people. What the hell is wrong with that? And because I have had a couple of young women who tell me, you don't need to open the door for me. I can do it myself. Okay. I'm just doing it out of courtesy, not because I don't think that you can't open the damn door. So that's where knowledge comes in. Is maybe if these young women understood that in my generation, you know, this was a sign of respect and a sign of good manners. Because that's the way my grandparents, you know, and my mother taught me, was to have good manners in public, to be a nice person in public. It's not a direct slide towards you, it's just good manners. You know, so that's where knowledge comes in, and that's why knowledge is incredibly powerful. You know, and here's the end chapter in part two is called the perpetual learner's advantage. If you are constantly doing something to learn and to read books and listen to audio books and watch, you know, informative YouTube videos, not, you know, not silliness, but informative things that help broaden your mind. You don't have to do it all the time. Okay? I watch stupid videos too. I'm 61 years old and I enjoy dumb videos. You know? They're funny. Some of them are funny. Some of them are stupid, but some of them are funny. So there's a time for all of those things, and the reason that I say that is because, you know, most people take literally when you say, well, you have to be a perpetual learner. Well, goddamn, I don't want to live my whole life where all I got to do is, you know, learn. No. But take the time to give yourself that gift. Make an investment in your own life success. And have good knowledge. Why do you think conservatives go out and destroy people on college campuses? Because they don't come prepared to argue a point. They come prepared to just simply argue and call names and stuff like that. When if you came with a real sense of knowledge, I bet you there's some liberals out there that could give you a damn good run for your money. You know, if you're a conservative, I bet you there that if there's some liberal folks out there that could give you a run for your money, especially when they come prepared, you know. And so having your, you know, and don't get in a situation, because here's what happens. You get made a fool of because you can't answer the simplest of questions about that which you are advocating. And then it becomes a fuck you and you're a fascist pig and all these other things because you can't articulate a good answer. What would happen if you could? What would happen all of a sudden, whomever you're talking to on the stage goes, shit, dude, you know? And you metaphorically just punched this dude in the gut. Didn't see it coming. That's power. Fuck you is not power. Power comes from the question that articulates a viewpoint that makes people go, well, shit, I didn't think about that. So I'm not saying you got to change. I'm just saying knowledge is power. And that's why I wrote this book. Doesn't matter who you are, where you are, what you do, what you believe in. It makes no difference to me. This is a free country. You are free to advocate whatever you want. But do so from a position of strength, not from a position of weakness. And my other thing is that before you follow the herd, understand where the herd's going. Because if the dude or the woman leading the herd leads you into a buzzsaw, well, that wasn't very smart. Maybe you have a shared ideology, but if they're making buffoons of themselves, liberal or conservative, be able to sit there and go, well, you know, that's not, I see this your way, I see it in a different way. And that's where real power comes. Real knowledge comes into play. You know, and that leads us into part three, which is succeeding in any situation. Adaptability as the key to success. And that's what we've been talking about here. And we get into it in great length in the book, is have some adaptability to hear. You don't have to subscribe to, but you do need to hear and understand the point being made. This way you can go back and say, no, here's the way that it is. And you're able to get people to listen to your point in ways that, you know, Gandhi had a time in when he was working towards getting India its freedom from British rule. And he listened. That was the one thing that I would say that Gandhi was amazing at, is he would listen to both sides of the argument. He would listen to the Muslims and he would listen to the Hindus equally. And when they uprose against him, and this is why I'm saying you can stand out in the crowd, okay, and you can actually sit there and say, I don't subscribe to either side, and this is a key point to my point of the book, is so they started killing each other. They started warring on the streets, rioting, killing each other. And back then, guns were not that prevalent. So you know how they were killing each other? With swords and knives. Imagine being killed with a sword, being hacked to death. It's ghastly. It's the most god-awful thing I can imagine. If I was going to have to die, I'd rather take a bullet to the noodle and be done with it than get hacked to death. I mean, that's just ghastly, you know, just absolutely ghastly. And so what he did in protest of this is he said he would fast and he would not eat anything. And if it took his life, so be it. But he was not going to subscribe to either side. He loved with all of his heart his India, which was made up of two diverse groups of people who, you know, haven't really ever got along very well, which is sad because that was not what he wanted. And he got so much shit when they divided India and Pakistan. And you know, but his heart was in absolutely the right place. And he almost died twice. This happened. And they would beg him to eat. And he would get himself so sick that all he could do in the beginning was drink a little bit of water with a little bit of lemon juice. He couldn't even eat solid food. He was so, his conviction was so strong that he brought himself to the utter brink of death. So my point is you can stand in opposition. You can stand alone. But when you have the knowledge that he had, he knew that this was the only way that he could get madness to stop. And thank God that these groups of warring people would lay down their arms, would lay down their arms to save this man's life. That is selling an ideal. That is getting people to see things your way. He took two warring sides and said, wait a minute. That's bullshit. That's not, of course, he would never have used that language or said that. But he was willing to give up his life for an ideal. And I see that passion in people. But I see it in the sense that you're going to divide yourself from, you know, the rest of America. You know, so many people are saying what a shithole America is. Well, you know, yeah, it has its problems. All countries have some jaded past that's not very pretty. You know, but instead of looking at all that, why don't we look at how far we've come? How far have we come? And I hope I don't get any blowback from this, because I really, you know, the next thing is I look at where we came, where our country came from, and you know, I don't experience and haven't experienced, so therefore I don't have haven't walked in some folks' shoes. But what I do know is that around me and around, you know, all the people that I know, acquaintances, business acquaintances and things like that, you know, I have never experienced racism. I never got a job above someone else because I'm white, and I've never, you know, I got a job, or someone else got the job that was qualified to do the job. You know, I was up for the same job that several other people from different walks of life were there, and I've never experienced that. They got the job. We shook hands and, you know, hey, congratulations, man. That fucking rocks. And I'm friends with so many people that over the course of the history of my life, you know, what's funny is some of those people have worked for me and I have worked for some of those same people. And we always, it wasn't a question of, I've had friends who were from different backgrounds call me and go, "Hey, man, you want to come work for me?" And at the time, early in my career, I said, "Yeah, hell yeah. Where do I come?" It was, and it might have been an African American woman. I never, that's the thing, is the large amount of people that I know, given anything, that they don't look at each other that way at all. And I live in Texas, for God's sake. This is, everybody's screaming how redneck we are, And I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that that shit doesn't exist, and fuck it if it does. I ain't supporting it. I don't believe in it. And I think that, because if I did, here's the thing, it's like I work with several companies that are owned by gay guys, and I work with some camera crews that are gay women, and if I was a shithead or a douche, some douche canoe, then I'm not gay. I'm not working with them. Because what happens is when we sit down, it's not about whether they're gay or I'm straight. It's about how cool a project can we make. How much fun can we have making this piece of art? It never is about the things, and that's what I don't understand. Don't let all this bullshit of people screaming that, there's all this injustice. Don't let it be. Don't let the injustice be. Find like-minded people and embrace that and go for it. If some, it's like, damn. So, my knowledge about inclusivity and things like that, I went out and I looked. I learned about it. But for me and my friends and my colleagues and for years, we never looked at each other that way, ever. So I hope this book helps you, become a better informed person, and that you're not just following what, the loudest group of people are saying without saying, "Wait a minute, I've never experienced that." Because I'm sitting there thinking, what an insult to doctors, lawyers, executives, successful people from non-Caucasian backgrounds that are incredibly successful. Incredibly successful. I applaud that more than I'm like, hell yeah. And I want to talk about real quick, and I almost wrote this into the book and I didn't, but I'll use it on the podcast. So this is something exclusive. It's not something that I haven't talked about before, so it's not new. So if you're a regular Joe listener, you can go, hell, he's talked about that before. But it is a good story. And it goes back to 1914. And it is something you can look it up on Google. You can definitely fact check me. But it's called the Christmas Truce. And during World War I, British soldiers and German soldiers were in the world, basically, were mortal enemies with Nazi Germany. Absolute. Going to, there's just, they were just mortal enemies, period. But during Christmas time, about December, 24th, 1914, and this was not something that happened because the two governments got involved or generals got involved, that, you know, people who usually put us in this shit that were involved in any way. These are men who were in the most god-awful, horrible place in the world as far as what was going on, the war that they were fighting. These are guys that if you were down in these trenches, you know, guys would put their helmets on a stick and stick their helmet up, and before it even got to the top, there was a sniper round right through the right through the helmet on both sides of the equation. Okay, so soldiers during this time, and this is where humanity comes together at its finest, in my mind, is soldiers began singing Christmas carols and patriotic songs. And so it's really not clear which ones, I don't think, started singing first. It doesn't really matter. But then the guys on the other side could hear, and they would sing a Christmas tune or a or some other, you know, song that was close to their country, and they began to do this. And it was, they had done this for a little while, and they weren't shooting at each other anymore. They weren't lobbing mortars at each other. They weren't, you know, killing each other. And for a brief moment, they were singing these Christmas carols, and then one side got brave and looked over. The other side got brave. They looked over, and they waved at each other instead of shooting at each other. And as their fear left them, they pulled themselves out of the trenches, and they would walk across this field, and they shook hands. They weren't directed to do it. They weren't ordered to do it. They weren't, you know, it wasn't some truce that was made. These guys were making peace on their own. And this is a lesson for a lot of people. And a lot of people who are warring with each other in our own country right now. These are mortal enemies, okay? And through a peaceful moment, they were able to come out. Then more and more of the soldiers came out. And it's rumored that they actually even played football, which in the U.S. would be soccer. But they actually were played football with each other. The soldiers exchanged buttons from their uniforms as souvenirs and tokens of the day. And they were able to have a cigarette together, because that was, you know, soldiers were trading songs and tobacco, wine. You know, they were trading what they had at hand. You know? And for that time, mortal enemies found humanity. So think about that for a minute. And I've talked about this before. You know, I don't think a regular Joe person, you know, sitting in a coffee shop or a barber shop or a cafe is... you know, thinking about how they could kill this person or that person or war with this country or war with that country. They're thinking about the same thing that all regular folks think about. You know, and I see this in a lot of things that are going on. They just want, you know, they want respect, peace, and those type of things. So, who's going to be the first one to lift their head above the trench and say, I'm holding out my hand in friendship and in peace. I'm not here to scream and yell with you. So this is what I mean when, you know, you have to become a perpetual learner. You have to have knowledge, power, and adaptability. You know, these guys could have gone out and killed each other. They didn't. They could have let a whole bunch of these guys stand up and slaughter them all. They didn't. They actually came out and celebrated a time, because you know why? Because I can only imagine that they were probably so sick and tired of killing each other and being enemies that somebody had to stand up and say, wait a minute. I'm done. I'm done being nasty. I'm done being mean. I'm done being, you know, all of these things. I just want peace. I want to go home. I want to mow my grass. I want to have a garden. I want to hug my kids. I want to kiss my spouse. I want to laugh. I want to watch my kids grow up, and I want my grandkids, and I want to spoil them rotten. I want good health. That's, man, we've gotten away from that. So, succeeding in any situation, if you want to succeed in any situation, you need real knowledge. So you have to be adaptable, just like these guys were. You know, this is part three of the book, is you have to be adaptable. Okay? And that's the key to any success, is you may not like the situation that you're currently faced with, however, you can adapt to say, okay, we can agree to disagree. That statement's fell so far from the national discourse, it's not even funny. Conquering the unfamiliar. Knowledge helps you conquer that which is unfamiliar to you. That way, when you make a point, you're not unfamiliar and you don't look like a buffoon. You're able to articulate your point in a way that people go, shit, I get that. I get that. So, be willing. Be open-minded. Be open-hearted. You know? We get into the advantage, you know, of life. And you can have a much more fulfilling and sustaining life if you really understand what's going on around you, that you take the time to look into things that may not make sense to you, or things that may go against the grain of your heart. This also, all of this knowledge and things, just so you know, and I wrote a whole chapter on this, is you become indispensable. You know? And when you want your colleagues and your peer group to go, I don't know, go ask Bob what the hell. Shit, he knows everything. I don't. But, you know, you want to become that person. You know, there's a lot of guys out there that are in the success arena that will tell you, you know, you need to become the industry leader by becoming the industry expert. You need to be national news first call when something in that industry happens. You need to be, your phone needs to blow up when something goes on, and your phone's blowing up because all these news organizations want your opinion. They want to know what's up from you. Why? Because you have the knowledge and the understanding of the situation in order to make a very good point. You know, and it's really cool that once, you know, as you develop your mind, you become, have this wonder of understanding. The wonder, excuse me, not wonder, but wonder of understanding. It becomes a fun place. It becomes a joy to grow in knowledge. It becomes a joy to, you know, some people, I hate school. I'm saying you got to go to freaking school. This isn't about school. We way past school, baby. No. This is about you learning how to overcome things that you find. You know, if you can argue a lot of stuff, you know, for example, vegans. I'm not one, but I, you know, vegans talk about all of this, and that you can argue the fact that when the soy milk that you're drinking, when they go to plant soybeans to make soy milk, how, you know, the ground squirrels, snakes, bugs, all the things that are killed in order to grow your soybeans in order for you to have soy milk. You're still killing animals. You know, and in Texas, for example, we're being overrun by wild hogs. You know, the population is in the millions, you know, and for them, you know, and for even white-tailed deer. White-tailed deer are so prolific, and same thing with hogs, that if you don't have a time for harvest of these animals, first off, they're going to starve and die, and that's a shitload more horrible than harvesting them for food. You know, so if there's, I think at last count, there were 7 million wild hogs in Texas. Where is the food to sustain them? They're good at multiplying. That's something hogs and deer are really good at. They're very prolific at it. So, you know, there's points to be made on both sides. You know, I don't want to kill it. I don't want to indiscriminately kill an animal. You know, I think, you know, it is a tough thing to, you know, some of the points that they make are valid, and some of the points I'm making are valid, and I'm not taking a side at this point, because I love my animals. I do. I love them to death. They're spoiled rotten. But there are things that you have to make concessions on, because, you know, you're going to let tens of thousands of deer die a slow, painful, horrible death so that you can feel better about eating your salad? And there's not a sustainable way or a friendly way to plow a field to make all the greens and the things that you want. You know, there's going to be some, sadly, there's going to be, you know, groundhogs and prairie dogs and, you know, rabbits and all kinds of things that sadly get lost in the wake of growing the lettuce you eat in your salad, the soybeans that make your milk, the, you know, all of these things. There is a price that's paid for that. Sadly, I wish there was a better way. So that's the real question. What's the better way? You know? And here's another thing that you know, where you could make a point is that if you think about if everything was put here because God put them here, for example. You don't have to subscribe to God or Christianity. If you're an atheist, God bless. If you're agnostic, I understand. But for the sake of conversation, let's just say that he is or what is real, okay? Everything on this planet has a reason for being. Dairy cows, what do you think they're here for? They're here to give milk. You know, you can argue the point, it's mean and stuff, but, you know, when was the last time you had a glass of milk? Last time you ate a bowl of cereal? So it really becomes something where you start going, damn, I need to learn more about this. You know? Do what you can where you can, and then don't lose your mind over the rest of it, I guess, is my thing. You know? And what's one of the most important things, I think, in this whole book is becoming our best selves. Don't be someone that follows the herd. Just because everybody's over here screaming, you know, stop this or stop that, or they're super gluing their hands to the freeway, you know, because they don't want they're fighting global warming, which again is a contentious argument. Sorry, I had to get a drink of coffee. You know, it's when you can become a better you, then you can bring, you know, people are going to get attracted to that. You know, I don't, you know, for all the climate folks, you know, that do stuff like that disrupt in a major way things where there could be catastrophic issues, and there has been, you know, in the sense that it clogs up people who are trying to get home to their children, people that may be in an emergency situation, people who are just fucking tired, man, and just want to go to work, or they just want to come home. But just regular folks wanting to do, you know. So come, you know, I would think that coming up with better ways, you know, I think the next Nobel Prize would be for someone to come up with a way to take fossil fuels and make clean energy out of them. We can completely destroy and obliterate the world with nuclear bombs. We can absolutely take this whole planet and destroy it. But we can't figure out how to make fossil fuels burn clean or make them a clean energy option? Are you shitting me? We can build a better way to kill each other, but we can't build a better way to live together? Think about that for a minute. You got some pretty sharp cookies working at a lot of really cool places, and their whole job is to kill somebody. All that science knowledge and the best that you can produce is a missile that can fly through a window from 2 miles away and kill everybody in a room. But you can't figure out a way to make fossil fuels into a cleaner energy or a clean energy. It's a challenge. What if you could invent a way to make coal where when you burn it, there was no problem with it. Or when you mined for it, there was no problem with it. Imagine the flip, you know, if you want to get it down to a dollar amount, imagine the amount of money you would make if you could do those things, if people could cross over and change to that. Holy shit. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So that's a pretty cool thing to think about. An absolute cool thing to think about. As I said after the movie Oppenheimer came out, I said, imagine if that entire group of people was set in Los Alamos, New Mexico, and they were tasked with saving humanity instead of destroying it. What could have happened? What could have been? You know, the thing I love about Elon Musk is he's so ahead of the curve because, you know, if you look at SpaceX and where he wants to go with it, he's looking way down the road of being able to figure out a way to sustainably get to Mars, to sustainably get to other planets, how to get to the moon, how to, you know, he's developing ways to look at what he did with his satellite system, and arguably Starlink is an amazing, I've used it, and it's freaking awesome. All the while he's building gigafactories and things that are completely sustainable. You know, he told Leonardo DiCaprio that it would take, and I want to say it was like it wasn't that many gigafactories around the world to produce enough energy for the entire world. So, you know, the big thing is that, you know, wind and all that energy is they don't really have a good way to store up that energy. Well, imagine if you were the person that invented that. You can invent a bullet that rips someone's body apart in a heinous way, or you could invent storing energy that allows wind energy and solar to be stored in a way that they can draw from it when the grid needs it, and then all of a sudden those coal-fired plants and things, you know, what if you took that existing technology, coal-fired power plants, took that existing technology and you made it an absolute totally green space? Everything about it is absolutely friendly. You don't think that somebody could come up with that? And again, I go back to you can invent a nuclear bomb to vaporize the world. You can invent lasers. You can invent all the things that destruct human beings. But you can't figure out how to make something that actually would make a difference in humanity. I'm calling bullshit. Just saying. So, you know, no matter whether you agree with me or I agree with you, you know, I don't want to fight with you. I don't want to argue with people. And I don't think you really want to argue with me either. If you don't want me to answer, to open the door for you, fine, I won't. But if it's already open, walk through it. If it's not, I'll walk in front of you and shut the door behind me, and you can open the sumbitch all by yourself. I don't care. There's no skin off my back. Shouldn't be any off yours. Because it was never meant in a malicious way. And that's where there's a big disconnect here. is when you do something out of politeness, that's not malicious. That's not anything other than if that's something that you don't like, say, you know what, thank you so much for doing that. I'm against a man opening a door for me. Okay, cool. I can dig that. Absolutely can dig that. But let's not make a TikTok, you know, viral video because we're fighting like cats and dogs at the door, cussing at each other. That solves nothing. Solves absolutely nothing. You know, why are we having to be so mean? That just, you know, and I think so much of it is that people get so angry and frustrated with life because they don't know what to do with it. Well, you're going to have to learn. I think so many people get angry and frustrated. And I'm guilty of getting angry and frustrated because, like, sometimes when something's not working, I'm like, God dang it. And you get angry and you get frustrated, you get short and you get, you know, you don't become, you know, you're not very nice to be around because you're just, you know, you're angry. And people can feel it. Instead of doing that, snap the rubber band that you put around your wrist like they did when years ago to get you to stop smoking, and you, you know, every time you had a craving for a cigarette, you snapped a big thick rubber band on your wrist, you know? And so snap the rubber band. And come up with a solution. And it may take some time. Once you start getting into this, it's just like reading. Once you start reading, you know, you actually, with time, will get faster and faster and faster. You know, and at first, because if you haven't read anything in a long time, you're probably, because you're used to watching videos or listening to a podcast or whatever, you know. But I'm telling you that there was a scene in a movie with Oliver Platt, and I'll never forget it. It was funny as hell. The sheriff in the movie asked Oliver Platt's character, he said, where in the hell did you learn all that stuff? And he kind of brings the sheriff in and he goes, I'll tell you the secret. It's hidden in books in the library. And we talked about that yesterday, you know. Get your ass over to the library and read some books. I don't have time. Okay. So we're going to kind of sew it up here a little bit and get ready to close out the show. So my whole thing is about learning to organize your life to win. I'm going to do a selfless plug. I do have a book by that title. And one of the things that I challenge people to do, and I've challenged people in talks, you know, that say, I don't have, I got this, I got kids, I got blah, 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 blah. And then I always say this one thing. Did you at any time today take a bathroom break? Well, yeah. Okay. Well, how many times do you take a bathroom break? And they'll give you some number, you know, 2, 3, 4, whatever it is. And my retort back is, okay, so hang on. You told me that you had no time to do anything, yet you found the time to go to the bathroom. Why? Well, because I had to. There's your answer. Because you had to. So take some time. Here is the easiest way to find time to make a difference in your life. Is for the next 2 days, I would challenge you to get some pen and paper or get a diary, get whatever you got to get, a calendar, whatever the hell you got to get. Okay? And every day from the time you get up till the time your head hits the pillow, okay? And you're even journaling that. Write down every single solitary thing you did that day. and be sure to include time on the phone, time on the internet, time on social media, time doing nothing, time, whatever time you spent doing any function at all, including a bathroom break, and you can just put peed or bathroom break or whatever, okay? And look at that, because here is where you're going to find the time to do things that are meaningful to your life. You got to learn the difference between activity and productivity. Activity would be farting around on the internet, farting around on social media, and keep an outline of, well, I was on social media for 20 minutes, okay? And then maybe in the afternoon I was on social media for 30 minutes, okay? Whatever it is, write all those things down. I mean, you need to do it hour to hour, okay? So it may be better to if you're just going to take a piece of paper, write down, you know, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and go through an entire day. And write down each and everything at the end of each hour, you know, and set a 60-minute timer each time. And it, when the timer goes off, write down exactly what you did for that time. And this, there's no right or wrong answer. There's no test at the end of this. What it's going to tell you is how much time you waste in activity. People can tell me all the time, oh God, I'm so busy. And the vast majority of their day is just farting around. It's activity. It's not productivity. So it really gets down to, how bad do you want it? How much do you really want to change your life? How much do you want to make a difference in the world? Because screaming fuck you is not making a difference in anybody's world. It just makes you look like an idiot. But making a well thought out, articulate point makes me, my ears perk up and go, wait a minute, what the hell did you just say? And listen to what you're saying. And then reach out to somebody and say, you know what, I don't really agree with where we're at here on this subject, but you make a damn good point. I'm subscribing to what you do, because they make a good point. There is a trans woman that I follow, because she makes a damn good point. Helps me understand something that I don't really understand. It's not because I'm stupid. It's just because I don't walk in the shoes of a person who is trans. Therefore, who am I to presume what you go through? So it allows me to be, when I gain knowledge, it allows me to be tolerable, amenable to understanding someone who comes from a totally different place than me. Gee, imagine that. We get along. We don't have to agree, but we get along. So, you have all that. You have that chance. You have that opportunity. And it can really make all the difference in the world, you know, when you learn about other people and you learn about their struggles and you are able to articulate that in a way. And I'm able to learn, but I'm also able to articulate back my point of view and my thinking and my, you know, and we have a civil conversation about it and we learn to become friends. People can be friends and not, you know, I have a lot of gay friends. I'm not a homosexual. I'm a heterosexual. I have an enormous amount of African-American friends, Asian friends, especially Latino friends, because I live in South Texas. I have Iranian friends. I have friends in Dubai. I have friends in Abu Dhabi. I have friends from London. All walks of life, all kinds of backgrounds. And we're just that. We're some people, we're acquaintances, we're business colleagues. Some are inner circle friends, some are outer circle friends. Because we all have that. You know, you can be nice to coworkers, but, you know, not really have anything too much in common with them where you're, you know, over at the house, you know. Because we don't have anything in common other than we work together and we have fun at work, you know. And that's where that begins and ends. And that is totally fine. So be open-minded, be open-hearted. And let's not all just, you know, be so hateful to each other. It's just unbelievable. So anyway, I hope that you will go get my new book. It's on available on Amazon. If you follow the link to in the my bio, it's not directly to the book, but it will take you to our link tree, which will take you to where you can go to my Amazon author page, and all of my work, oops, I hit the microphone, sorry about that, all of my work is there, okay? And so I hope that you'll consider taking a look at it all, and you know, please follow us on X, or what's formerly known as Twitter. We're there, and then I have we're on YouTube, X, and where else? I think that's it. We also have a really groovy store on Etsy where we sell merch, and it's not always about, you know, like, you're not buying my branded merch, although I do have some branded merch there, but a lot of it's just funny, cool shit that, you know, I mean, I got like cups that say Area 51, I got hats that say Area 51 UFO, you know, butthead, flight risk. I mean, all kinds of cool shit. So I hope that you'll take a look at all that. So enough with the commercial. And I appreciate very much your subscribing to our channel. Please do so if you're not. If you can financially support us, thank you. God bless you very much for that. And so be a smart cookie, all right? And take some time to learn how to organize your life. And I'm telling you, once you do these things and learn the difference between activity and productivity, and really give yourself the gift of knowledge, it will make all the difference in your world. And I mean that with all sincerity. So God bless. I appreciate you listening. This is the Flight Risk Studios podcast show. I'm your host, Robert Bruton. Bye for now.